Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. We're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the executive director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, I want you to think about a recent time you were asked to preach somewhere. Did they give you an assigned text or topic?
Okay, I got one in mind.
Which one? Did they give you a text or a topic then?
They actually gave me two texts, and they said I could choose either one.
Okay, do you remember which text you chose?
Yeah, I did. It was out of John 13, where Jesus commands his followers to love one another. He's with them shortly before his death. There was that one, and then there was one out of 1 John, and it was the same idea, love one another, but it was much longer, and I thought the one out of John is going to be much easier to deal with because it concisely says what I want to say, so I'd rather deal with that one.
Mm-hmm. How about if I read that John 13 passage then, John 13 verses 34 to 35?
Okay, I'm game for you to do that.
Okay, these are Jesus' words. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another.
Okay, the only thing that doesn't do in that short section is to give the context of him being shortly before his death. But yeah, I remember reading that and thinking that's the one I'll work with as opposed to the longer one in 1 John.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've got a text now. What do you do next? Take us through the process of how you turn that given text into a sermon.
Okay, you have a text, so I'm going to read that, and then I'm looking early on in my sermon preparation process to what is the subject here. And I would say probably the subject was one of Jesus' last commands. So that's the subject. And what is the desired response? That's pretty easy to come up with. He wants you to love others even like he loves you. And this is going to be how all people will know that you're my disciple. So I usually, just because I take the subject and the response, I try to put it into a sentence. And I'm not sure if I can reconstruct the sentence, but it would be something like the last command Jesus gave his followers was to love as he loved. So this has to be heard as very important, something like that. I'm a wordsmith that some, but that's the idea. And you can understand what the sermon's going to be about by that given sentence. And that's the reminder to me of this is what I'm talking about. Here's where I'm going. So those two questions I answer early on. What's the subject? What's the response? Then I go to the third question, and that is, how do people do this? So everybody knows they're supposed to love other people like he loved them. But how do they do that? And that's where I have great freedom in trying to tell them how. But I also got a problem because they've heard it so many times that they almost know what you're going to say before you say it. So I remember struggling. I was talking to a Chinese congregation. They've asked me to come back. I probably preached there, I'm guessing, 7 or 8 times, and they keep asking me to come back. So I'm glad to do that. And I feel like I know the congregation to some degree. They have a Chinese-speaking congregation and a English-speaking congregation, and I've never spoken to the Chinese-speaking congregation, but I've gotten to know the English-speaking people pretty well, and I thought, now how do I say this in a way that's going to be different for them? And that's where my struggle was. And I basically came up with the idea that in dysfunctional families, families that don't function the way they should, in those families, they play favorites, for one thing. And then the other thing is, not only is there a favorite, but usually in that family, they put somebody in the doghouse because love has to be earned on the basis of how you act. So I thought I'm going to talk about the dysfunctional things, not only in families, but in the family of God. Because in the family of God, people act the same way many times. It's if they're dysfunctional. There are certain people they like and they're kind of favorites. They enjoy being with them. And then there are certain people, because they've done something out of line with what the people in the church want, they put him in the doghouse. So I thought that gives me some kind of a feel to take it out of just the normal thing your people are going to hear. So I played with that idea that putting people in the doghouse is not the Jesus way to do things. Make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So I've got the love thing going, and I got a different way to approach it that maybe they're going to hear me, other than I've heard it 1,000 times before, and I know I'm supposed to, but I don't know how to do that. So I actually started the sermon, Dean, with dysfunctional families are known by a lot of traits, but here's one that maybe you identify with, maybe you don't, but at least you'll understand it. In dysfunctional families, they play favorites, and a favorite is usually on, are you acting the way I want you to act? It's love on the basis of performance. And this person performs like I like, so we show that child love, and they're the favorite. But if children don't act the way we like, we withhold the love, and we put them in the doghouse. And I remember saying to the Chinese congregation, do you know what when I say put people in the doghouse, does that make sense to you people from your Chinese background? And oh, immediately I got a response. So I knew they were tracking with what I was talking about. And then I talked about how painful it was if you're a child who's ever been put in the doghouse, because you're not receiving the love that you want to have. And then I went in from there. I want to talk about that, not in family units, but in the church family situation. And I want to talk to you about something Jesus said. It was very important. He said it, you know, and then I put it in the context. And then I went to my text. And then I said, you know what? You don't do this as a corporate group. You don't all say, let's put Joe in the doghouse. Mm-hmm. But people do it individually. They do it almost subconsciously. I will relate to this person in a loving way because they're acting the way I want them to perform. But I'm going to put Ralph in the doghouse. And I don't tell him he's in the doghouse. He just figures that out over time because of how I act toward him. Am I making sense? Mm-hmm. And I was seeing just through body language these people in the Chinese congregation kind of nodding their head and so on. So I knew that they were tracking with me, and I was able to take that text everybody has heard so many times and apply it. And then basically, as I came to the end, I said, you know, do you know what it would take to release someone from the doghouse? You know, because you're going to give love not on the basis of performance and whether they comply with how you want, but you're going to give love on the basis of what Jesus said. Mm-hmm. This is how I want you to love people, like I have loved you. In fact, what I'd like for you to do is for you to, as I give you just a time of meditation, say, you know what, I think I put so-and-so in the doghouse. Now, I couldn't come up with the Chinese names to name people. This is, you know, but I want you to think about who is in the doghouse. Maybe even you're the one who put them there, but you didn't even realize you'd put them there. But how you treat them, mm-hmm. they know, unless they change or unless they do something. It's not what you do, it's what they do. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get out of there. And it's a very uncomfortable place to be in. You know, so I was playing that thing. And then I said, now, I think this morning is what I'd like to do is to let the Holy Spirit say, whatever your name is, I want you to let so-and-so out of the doghouse. And you don't run up to them and say, you're out of my doghouse, guess what? You know, now act like you're supposed to because I will put you back in there again if you don't. I just want you to, in that compartment in your mind, turn that switch and say that this person's not in my doghouse anymore. And I begin to treat them like a normal human being, even more than that, like Jesus would treat them. So at that point, I got the subject, I got the response, I got the how-to, and I got the how long, and I dealt with that saying, you know, it may take a while before you get indication from that person that they realize they're no longer in your doghouse, you know. And then I remember at the end, I used the illustration saying, have you ever been in a situation when either through a siren going off or whatever, all the dogs, all in the neighborhood are all yapping, jumping up and down. You know, I tend to feel in my spirit that there are a lot of people who say, I've been in the doghouse, and if I could get out of there and so-and-so is going to release me, I'm excited, and they're barking, you know, saying, yeah, let me out, let me out. Well, let that be the case in terms of this congregation for this day, that those dogs are going to be freed, because that's an important thing. So the doghouse had nothing to do with that passage. It was just saying, here's the passage, and I want you to understand that this last command of Jesus was very important to him, and he wants you to live the way he wants you to live. But then through the application, I had total freedom to work that. So I was still going back to the passage all the time, but I was trying to get it in a way that was new and fresh. I think it worked. You know, mm-hmm. my feeling was, because I had numbers of people came up to me and said, thank you. Mm-hmm. And say much more than that, but just thank you. And that meant to me, I heard what you said. I'm going to do that. I'm willing to work on it. And so on. So it was a very successful sermon to me. I'm not sure I told you about it as well as I preached it that morning because I felt really good as I put it together. But I put it together with those four questions, and I just kind of followed the four questions almost as an outline.
Wow. Well, that's a fabulous way of talking about extending God's unconditional love, putting it in that context.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. And it's certainly a new take that you wouldn't expect, especially when people are familiar with the passage and have heard
it. Yeah, I'm sure that there are other ways you could preach it. You know, there's no mm-hmm. question in my mind. But once I knew what Jesus said, which was the subject and the response he wanted, then I had freedom to take it. And, again, it doesn't take a whole lot to explain what Jesus was saying. It's helpful to say this is the context. He's going to die. He's modeled this. He's modeled it even that evening for the people. And he's even modeling it for one of the guys who's going to betray him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they've heard it so many times. So then the question was, how do I take that and then put it into a context where they can receive it and feel it and want to act upon it? So those questions helped me immensely. Time and again, I've thought, once I know the answer to those questions, putting the sermon together is easy. The hard part is when you're working on a sermon and you're not really sure where you're going and you're kind of struggling to come up with profound thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the profound thoughts. It's usually the simplicity of what you can say and how people will respond to it.
Yeah. So those four questions really give you a framework.
Yes.
And in a sense, they free you to then be as creative as possible in hanging the appropriate illustrations on that framework that you've built.
Yes, yeah. Those questions are huge. Yeah. And they're not easy. Sometimes it's not easy to figure out what the subject is. Usually that comes relatively easy because it's in the text and also the response. And then the big question is the how-to. How do you make it practical for the people? And how do you give them some kind of a thing that says, this is how long the whole process is going to take. But you can expect, if you say, I'm going to free Pete from the doghouse, you can expect probably within a matter of a month that all of a sudden there's a whole new relationship between mm-hmm. you and Pete. And you say, how'd that happen? Well, it happened because the Lord worked through the message and the Holy Spirit used it and so on.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that's wonderful. The answer to four basic questions early on in the sermon preparation process helps form how you will preach on a given text.
Yeah, that's well said.
Very good. Well, we're grateful that you joined us for this time together, and we invite you to visit our website, sermoncoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. And as we always do, we invite you to join us for our next sermoncoach.com podcast.